All right, thank you. Shifting gears a little bit, going to talk about youth education, K-12, school garden-based education impact on driving knowledge and preference. And this is the work of my graduate student. And I'm sorry, this is not appearing on the screen here, so. Okay, never mind. Kelly Atterbury, master's student. Sorry about that. I can't get the mouse to work. Kelly Atterbury is the master's student on this project, and then Leanne Riddle is the food sense coordinator for one of the counties where we're working in, and Washington State University in Northwest Washington. All right, so just a little bit of background information, diet-related health issues in the United States. Unhealthy eating habits of children, less than 10% of children ages 6 to 11 eat the USDA-recommended daily amount of fruit, which is 1.5 to 2 cups, and vegetables, 2 to 3 cups per day. That's your 5 servings a day, all right, 5 a day. So less than 10% of children are consuming that amount. The unhealthy diet and lack of exercise are the cause for heart disease, which as of 2012 became the primary cause of death in the United States. Obesity doubled in children ages 6 to 11 and quadrupled in adolescents 12 to 19 in the past 30 years, and I think we all know that we have a health epidemic going on in the United States, diabetes type 2, and it's just it's a problem everywhere throughout the country. So U.S. National Lunch Program, 1946 was when it was established. 2012 was a realignment. It was the first realignment in about 15 years, I think. And the name of that realignment was Healthy, Hungry, Free, Hunger-Free Kids Act, Nutrition Standards. And the whole idea was to align the school meals with nutritional science. What a concept, right? If we're going to serve them good our food, let's make it good and let's make it healthy. And in that lunch program, it includes 1/2 cup of pulses per week per student. So if you're a recipient of the free lunch program, then the schools have to serve 1/2 cup per student per week. In the United States, there are 55 million children attending K through 8th grade. So this is the target audience for our project. And 56% of those students eat at least one meal per day in the school cafeteria. So there's just no question at all that school cafeteria meals serve a huge purpose in the United States in terms of getting food into the mouths of many, many hungry children. And that's the MyPlate logo, which you probably all recognize, which replaced MyPyramid quite a few years ago. All right, so the study objectives for Kelly on this project. Dry bean is a pulse crop that we used in our studies. It's the only pulse crop that grows well throughout Washington. We tried lentils, we tried chickpeas, but they just don't grow for us in Northwest Washington, and dry beans are completely reliable. They're also used in schools as one of the food sources, and their nutrition is nutritious and relatively inexpensive, and they are currently used in most schools probably in the country. So what we did is we developed a school garden-based STEM curriculum, and hopefully everybody knows STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. So we developed that curriculum. That was part of the project. And then secondly, we measured knowledge of and preference for beans following education with that curriculum. So those are just 2 photographs with the curriculum in action. So the students planting beans using a tape measure, which is a math skill, measuring the height of beans, and then calculating the average height. So that's math calculations again, and then the science of germination, etc. These are all lessons that were built into the curriculum. So again, it's a STEM curriculum. It meets the Washington State Health Standards. It meets the Next Generation Science Standards, and it meets the National Core Education Standards. So it was really essential for us in order for the teachers to use it. It had to meet the learning objective standards. That was just a requirement in order for the teachers to be able to use it. We integrated classroom and school garden lessons of nutrition, biology, and math learning, and that's the photograph there is Kelly in the front of the class. She's my master's student teaching this. She developed 3 lessons for the 4th grade, and she taught this along with the teachers in 6 classrooms in 2 counties, so that's Whatcom and Skagit in Northwest Washington. So she actually was in the classroom teaching the class. Again, some of the math lessons in the garden were using the tape measure to calculate planting distance for seeds, measuring plant height, calculating averages, measuring stands, calculating plant stands, measuring differences between varieties. And the picture on your bottom left there, you can see 2 varieties that germinated differently. So these are all beans. So we had 2 germination rates, so the students had to calculate the germination rates and then come up with reasons why they possibly would have been germination differences. And then the picture on your far right there, the girls harvesting the beans, so at the end of the season. So it's a little awkward the way the class is designed, but classes are in the spring, so the students plant, they do all the math classes in the spring, and then the next class comes in, the new class, 4th grade class comes in the spring, and they harvest those beans. And then that new fourth grade class then would come back in the spring and they'd plant the beans. So it's the way it has to be, right? Classes start in September and they end in June, so that's just the way it is. So those girls are the beginning of their fourth grade. They're harvesting the beans, and then they're counting beans, doing average bean weight, so it's all calculation. And then they move into the class, and then they do the germination assays in the classroom. So that's the way the lesson is designed. So what we did is we did a student survey from this, and you can see the survey right there. It's a one-pager, very simple, had to be within 5-10 minutes of time that it would take each student to fill it out. Our survey sample size was 101 students as a fourth grade, and one of our teachers wanted to use this in her fifth grade class as well, so we had one fifth grade class. And then we had a comparison class of one class that did not partake in the education at all, and so they're the control group. We did a pre- and post-education survey, and we were looking at two things. We wanted to know whether or not the preference of the children for dry beans changed in the cafeterias, whether or not their eating behavior changed as a result of taking these classes, and whether or not their science education, nutrition, and biology changed as a result of taking these classes. So here are the first set of results in terms of the preference for dry beans, and the red bar here indicates the positive change among the students. So there's a 43 looking at the first bar there. Considering dry beans as a healthy choice, so this is asking you, if you were a student, would you consider dry beans to be a healthy food choice? And the change, so the post-education, 43% of the children indicated that it was indeed a healthy food choice, so there was a 43% increase in the number of students who thought it was a healthy choice. 35% more students indicated that they ate more dry beans post-education. 31% indicated they were consuming more dry beans, so they're eating more frequently and consuming more dry beans each time. And 52% of the students indicated that they wanted to see more dry beans served in the school cafeteria. So basically, these are all extremely positive results as a outcome of this education. When we looked at the science and biology knowledge, the results were not quite so significant. So 21% of the students, there's a positive change in knowledge. However, that was not statistically significant compared to the control group. However, looking at the second question, are beans an excellent source of dietary fiber? The answer is yes, and there was a 38% increase in the number of students who got that answer correct. So as a result of the education, there was indeed a significant increase in knowledge there. Beans are both in the protein and vegetable subgroup. The answer is yes, but there was only an 18% increase in students who got the answer right, which was not a significant difference. So it was an increase, but it wasn't significant. And where do you find beans on the plant? And the answer was the pod, and there was a positive but relatively negligible increase, and that's because most of the students knew that anyway. Okay, so quick summary of all of that. Overall, preference was increased more than knowledge as a result of participating in this curriculum. 52% of the students positively changed their opinion about more dishes being made with dry beans in the school cafeteria. 31% of the students said that they ate more beans post-education than pre-education. 38% of the students learned that dry beans are an excellent source of dietary fiber, and I didn't get into any of the nutritional science of this project at all, but if you know anything about diabetes prevention, then dietary fiber is a key component of diabetes prevention and management, and so that fiber constituent is actually very, very important, and dry beans are one of the recommended foods for those people who have type 2 diabetes, and so that's why there's a real emphasis on dry beans and fiber in this nutrition education part. So didn't get into any of that, but it's actually a really important part of the lesson plan. 43% of the students agreed more strongly that dry beans are a healthy food choice, and again, 78% of the students already knew that dry beans were found in the pod, so we have to come up with a better question to really ascertain whether or not there was an increase in knowledge. And I really want you to note the pictures there. This was an active class, hands-on class in the school garden. And I think, let me see here, I want to not forget one of the points I want to make, but I want to end with this slide here. Actually, I think I have one more slide. But their next steps were to assess the school garden-based curriculum. So we did a teacher survey, and we've collected all of that data, and we've revised the curriculum based on the teacher comments of the survey. We have the curriculum posted on our website, which is right there. and we have just completed an assessment of the availability and opportunities of serving pulses in school cafeterias in Washington. And so we have submitted our paper to the Journal of Nutrition Science Education for food educators on the curriculum, and now we're just preparing the second paper there on assessing the availability. We're preparing that paper for submission. What I wanted to say was I think it's really important moving forward if we're going to, the idea of using school gardens for education, in order for teachers or any groups to justify using a school garden for education during the school hours, it has to be core curriculum based. It has to be learning objective based. So we found that's just an absolute must, and so this curriculum addresses those issues. So this is my last slide. I just wanted to acknowledge our collaborators. It takes a huge amount of work to do a study like this if you're going to get into the schools. So if anybody's done that, you know what it takes. So that we had to get the buy-in from all the principals, all the teachers, the school food service directors, the school garden educators. In our state, Washington, the school gardens are separate from the schools themselves, so they're all community-run. It's all volunteer-run, and just getting that all coordinated is actually a challenge. And if anybody's done a project like this, I'll tell you one of the big challenges for dry beans is because those gardens are managed by volunteers all summer long, which is when everything is growing. Even though we had signs up in the plots, they still harvested the dry bean plants as though they were green beans. So when we came back in the fall this year, 2014, so a year ago, when the students came back in the fall to harvest their dry beans, the pods were gone, because the volunteers had harvested them over the summer thinking they were green beans. So if it just tells you the level of complexity, the number of people you really have to get on board and educate about what you're doing and why, et cetera. Our funders were the American Pulse Association. They funded the graduate student. We also received funding from the Northwest Ag Research Foundation, which are our growers. So our growers in Western Washington funded this work, and we actually have a couple of growers right now who actually last year was their first year, and now they've planted acres of dry beans with the idea of selling them directly to the school, so to the farm to school program. It's a relatively easy crop to do. The food safety issues are very low, so the opportunities are very good. It's an easy crop to store. You can store it 12 months very, very easily. So it gives us a really good opportunity in terms of a farm to school project. And then Washington State University's Center for Sustaining Ag and Natural Resources also was one of our funders. So that's my presentation time. Any questions?
We have time for questions.
Yeah?
Kids selling dry beans, how are these prepared for their meals?
Yeah, so dry beans, the number one way that dry beans, in our assessment of the cafeterias, the number one way that dry beans are prepared, they're not even prepared, the number one way that they're served in cafeterias today in Washington, which I suspect may mirror most states, is they take the can, and they take the top off the can and they dump it into a serving container and put it on the salad bar. Number one serving way of dry beans, of actually legumes, chickpeas, dry beans. And then there's a complaint on the behalf of the kitchen staff that the children don't eat those. Any questions on that? That's the number one way that they're served. Absolutely, yeah. So this is all, the board?
IRB
approved. IRB approved. You have to go through the principals, you have to go to the teachers, getting the photographs, parents, everything, you name it. Oh my gosh. Yeah, good question. So the question is, have we put any thought or have we done any work in going back to the parents and seeing whether or not the parents are doing any work with this? And maybe this gets to the first question a little bit, which is how are dry beans served? We did get some feedback from the parents saying, how do you expect me to cook these dry beans? And so we actually have a recipe. So Kelly did a video, a YouTube video, with two recipes, one of them being, I have to remember what she did. She did just a puree recipe, just a bean puree, and then she did a cake, a black bean cake recipe. And that we actually showed that in the classroom with the students, and then that's in the newsletters, it's online. And then I just got an email just yesterday showing me that the Washington State Department of Ag Food and Farm to School Program has listed all of our reference resource information on their websites. So it goes directly to their to that program. So yeah, linking to the parents, because the parents obviously are the ones at home, but I personally think more importantly for the sake of our project, we want to go directly to the school cafeterias, and maybe that gets back again to the first question, which is how are you cooking, how are the schools cooking, and most schools do not have kitchens, right? It's just heat and serve. So getting drive-ins in the drive form on the local level is a huge challenge. We have very small schools in some of our areas. They have kitchens, but most areas have no kitchens. So most of those drive-ins are coming in canned form. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Speaker.